Well, hey, church, glad to see you guys here, bright and early, looking happy after losing an hour of sleep last night, but you guys are here. That's cool. I'm glad. Hey, just want to reiterate one thing that Mike was just talking about, and that is our Fight Club kickoff event, which is happening tonight at our Fremont campus, and just want to invite all the men in here to come. Basically, I've had a lot of people ask me, like, what is Fight Club? Like, this sounds weird, and I'm like, it is kind of weird. Let me explain to you exactly what that is. Fight Club is simply a 10-week challenge for us men here in the church, and it challenges us in four key areas of our life, spiritually, physically, relationally, and intellectually, and we only meet twice. That's it. So the rest of the time, it's just we have this challenge each week that we have to do kind of on our own, the first time that we meet is tonight at the kickoff event, and then we have a mid-event. And by the way, can I just say this real quick? Little preview. Our mid-event this year is about to be sweet, okay? So I'm just saying, if you could get in and you could last like 5 weeks, you should do it just to make it to the mid-event, and then you can do whatever you want, okay? So that's what I say here. If you haven't done it before, shoot for the first half and just do it. It's a blast. We have fun, and especially tonight, I guarantee you, if you come tonight, you will laugh, okay? And it will be fun, and it will be interesting. I could tell you that. So just want to encourage you guys to jump in. It's at 10 o'clock. I get that it's late. All right, I get, especially on Time Change Sunday. Why would we do that? We do that on purpose, okay? It's not supposed to be something that's necessarily easy. I feel like in our culture today, we as men are not challenged in the ways that we should be challenged enough. And that's what this is designed to do. And so we don't want to take away from your family time, but we will take away from your sleeping time. And so that's what we're doing here today. And so again, just want to encourage you guys to jump in. Even if you're not sure if you want to do any of it, even if you're not sure if if you're going to make it, it's better for this thing, okay? It's better to jump in and try and to attempt it than to not attempt it at all. Okay, I firmly believe that it's good for you. And even when the guys started talking about it this year, they're like, okay, well, we're getting ready for Fight Club. I'm just like, oh. Any of you guys feel that way? You're just like, oh, I don't want to do Fight Club this year. It's all this stuff. You know, I got like, it's just kind of a weight on your shoulders. And it's like, I don't want to do it. But I'll be honest with you, when that feeling of that, it really shows me that I need it. And I wish I didn't. But I do. And it's good for me. And it's hard, and it's difficult at times, but it is good. So I'll see you guys out there tonight, and be ready. Okay, today we're in part 14 of our series, where we have been diving into, really exploring an ancient document that was written by a Greek doctor named Luke, who lived during the time of Jesus, but did not know Jesus personally. Okay, but Luke had heard the stories and he had heard the rumors about this Jesus guy. So what Luke does, and we've talked about this over the last few weeks, is Luke took months and months and months and months of his life, if not years of his life, to go and to investigate and to track down and to sit down with the eyewitnesses and to have the conversations and to ask the tough questions about Jesus. And once he gathers all of his information together, he compiles it all down into one document. And that, by the way, is the book of Luke that we all have in our Bibles, right? And so when Luke's writing this, what I want us to understand is Luke is not writing religious literature. He's not writing something that he's like, oh man, I hope someday this gets into the Bible. That's not what he's doing. That's not what he's thinking about. What Luke is doing, and when we read the book of Luke for ourselves, and as we explore the book of Luke together as a church family here on Sunday mornings, when we're reading it, what I want us to remember is that Luke is simply saying, hey, I'm documenting the events that happen in my lifetime. All right? This is just what happened. All right, I'm documenting it so that you will know about it. And when Luke's doing this, if you remember how it starts off, really the first word of the first verse, the first chapter of the book of Luke, all right, Luke tells us, he's like, I'm not the only one who's doing it. Okay, he's not just making this stuff up. He says, many have undertaken to compile a narrative about the events that have been fulfilled among us. He's saying, hey, all right, I'm not just like in a corner writing this stuff down, or this is not like something that happened a few hundred years ago, and he's like, he's writing this 200 years after this all happened. He's like, no, this happened, all right, in my lifetime. This happened around us. He says, so here I am, I'm documenting this just like many people have, which is the same stuff that we heard from the original eyewitnesses and servants of the word that handed them down to us. He says, so it also seemed good to me. Seemed like a good idea. And since I have carefully investigated, I've dove in to everything, all right, from the very first, I decided to write to you in orderly sequence. And so that's what Luke is doing. When we're reading Luke's, Luke is simply saying, hey man, this is what happened. Like, this is just what happened. I know it might sound hard to believe, and I know it might be hard to explain, but it happened. And so at this point in our story, Jesus has quite the following. Remember, Jesus, at this point, he's about 31 years old, and he's been traveling from town to town to town for over a year now, and everybody wants to see what Jesus is going to do next because Jesus has been doing things that people have never seen before. And everybody wants to hear what Jesus is going to say next because Jesus has been saying things that no one has ever heard before. And remember, at this point in history, the Jewish people have been waiting hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands of years, right, for what they considered as their Messiah. Now, Messiah is a super churchy word. I get it. Messiah is it's just an old word for the word Savior. All right. So for the Jewish people, they have been waiting generation after generation after generation for a Savior who is going to come on the scene and was going to save them, but not just them. Really save the entire world. And they didn't quite understand what that would look like. They didn't quite understand like why he was going to do this and what the big deal was about this, but they knew it was a really, really, really big deal. In fact, the entire Old Testament points to this one man who's going to come and is going to bless and save the world. And so Jesus shows up on the scene 2,000 years ago and he starts telling people, I'm the guy. I'm the guy. And he starts healing people. And he starts teaching people. At one point, he brings a guy back from the dead. We talked about that. And crowds, I mean, people think he's doing things that no one has ever been able to do before, all right? That supernatural stuff. And crowds start following him everywhere. And everybody in the crowds, everybody's asking the same question. They're all just like, could he be it? Could he be the one? In fact, a couple of weeks ago, just to kind of refresh us, if you remember the specific story that we're looking at, Jesus, he was teaching the crowds. He was on the edge, kind of on the shore of the Sea of Galilee. The Sea of Galilee, by the way, is just a huge lake up in northern Israel. And so he's on the shore of the lake, and he's been teaching all day, and he's tired, and he's hungry, and he's just like, okay, you know, the sun's going down. I got to get out of here. We need an exit strategy. And so Jesus tells his disciples, he says, hey, get a boat ready. Let's cross to the other side of the lake. In which case, I bet the disciples are just like, why? All right, we got a good thing going here, Jesus. Like, you got crowds, people, everybody loves you, you're healing people. I mean, this is like really, really, really good. Why would we go to the other side of the lake, which is just a bunch of work for us, and the people on the other side of the lake, like, those aren't Jewish people. Those people, Jesus, they don't like people like you. And Jesus says, let's go. And so they get into a boat, and he's tired, and they start heading that way across the lake. And if you remember, what happens, right? Jesus, he falls asleep in the back of the boat. And he's tired, and there's a huge storm that kind of pops up, and we talked about how the Sea of Galilee, like that still happens today, just because of the topography of the region. And so these storms just pop up from the middle of nowhere. One of these storms pops up, and then the disciples, they're freaking out so much because the boat's filling up with water, it's sinking. I mean, this is not good. They run over to Jesus, and they're like, hey, Jesus, do you even care? All right, we're sinking here. This is not a good thing. And you are sleeping. What is going on? And Jesus, remember, he kind of stands up and he gets his bearings. And he just says, be still. Stay still. And instantly, the storm's gone. And the lake is glass. And he looks over at his disciples. He's like, man, where's your faith? Did you really just ask me if I care? Did I hear that right? I was sleeping. All right. Woke me up. And he goes back to sleep. In the meantime, they get to the other side of the lake, and when they get to shore, at probably around that time, it's not the Bible, it's just my guess, is that, it's been kind of silent because Jesus kind of yells at them a little bit, like, where's your faith, man? You know, like that type of thing. And when they get off the shore, I bet they're like, you know, getting a little easy, like, that was crazy. All right, did you see that? They're like elbowing each other, like, you thought you were going to die. You were crying, you know, that type of thing, remember? And they get off, and then this naked demon-possessed guy comes running up to him, and he's like, ah, you know, and they're like, whoa, you know, and then this guy comes, and he bows before Jesus, and Jesus is like, what is going on here? And he actually has a conversation with this guy and the demons that are in the guy, which is crazy, and then he casts them out into a bunch of pigs, which run down a big hill into the Sea of Galilee and die. okay? And if you remember, everybody's just like, what just happened? And then the people who are in charge of the pigs are like, we are in big trouble. And so they run back to town, and they tell everybody, like, this thing happened. It's crazy. All the pigs are dead. What are we going to get? You know, we need another job. Like, you know, they're just trying to figure this out. And then they all, people from town, they come to see Jesus, and they're freaking out, not just at the power of Jesus, but they're freaking out because all of their pigs, like, they lost a bunch of money that day, if you know what I mean. And so they go to Jesus and they say, Jesus, we want you to leave. We don't want you to stay here. Please leave us. And Jesus and his disciples get back into the boat and they start heading back home. Jesus did not stay in places where he was not wanted. And he heads back to, specifically to Capernaum, which was a city right on the lake, on their side of the lake, which was kind of his home base. And so as they all sail back, as I can imagine, I'm sure the disciples can't stop thinking about what they had just experienced. Like over the last few hours. Like first you got the storm and it was crazy and they were freaking out. And then they freak out even more because they're kind of freaked out at the man in the back of the boat who controlled the storm. And then they get to shore and they're like, okay, that was crazy. That was a good story. I'll tell my grandkids that someday. And then they get off and then this naked guy comes running up. They're like, what is going on? And then Jesus deals with that. And Jesus is like talking to demons. Like all this stuff is happening. And when they get back to the shore, I mean, as they're making their way back to the other side of the lake, back to shore, I mean, I'm sure they are filled with awe and wonder, but also fear. All right? Not fear of their circumstances, but fear of the man in the back of the boat. And when they all get back to shore, on the Jewish side of the lake, there's a crowd waiting for him, and that's where Luke picks up. This is where we're at, chapter 8, verse 40. It says, when Jesus returned, the crowd welcomed him. I don't know, because they were all expecting him. I don't know why they were expecting him. They're like, okay, we know the people on the other side of the lake, they are not nice people. They are not going to last long with Jesus. And so here they are. They're like, oh, hey, here comes Jesus. He's coming back just like we expected. And it said, just then, a man named Jairus, he came. And he was a leader of the synagogue. Now, Jairus came and he fell down at Jesus' feet and he pleaded with him to come to his house, right? Now, so if you can imagine, this is what I want us to imagine. There's crowds of people that have been waiting for Jesus. Remember, people who are nothing like Jesus actually liked Jesus and Jesus liked them back. And so there's this crowd of people who are all there. They're there to welcome Jesus back. And everybody wants a selfie with Jesus because Jesus is kind of like this local celebrity type guy. And then Jairus, the leader of the synagogue, comes running up to Jesus and he falls at Jesus' feet. Now, when this happened, what we got to understand in our culture is that everybody in the crowd, everybody is shocked. All right? Everybody is stunned because in that culture, this is not how any grown man would ever act. All right, grown men did not run. All right, so if you're a runner in here, just saying, you would not last long in there. You'd have no respect, okay? That's why I don't run. So that's what there's, grown men didn't run. Not only that, but men didn't fall down at anybody's feet. All right, that's especially a respected man. This would never happen. And so here's Jairus. All right, he's the top religious leader in town. Everybody knew him. And he falls on the ground, which really shows us how desperate this man is. See, just because Jairus has got power, prestige, money, all the things that we run after like 5 days a week, you know what I mean? It's interesting. He's got all that. But that doesn't make him immune to life's problems. It don't. And so Jairus has a big problem. And that problem is he's got an only daughter who's about 12 years old, and she was dying. Can you imagine how Jairus felt in that moment? See, I know some of you can, because some of you have felt that before. You do know what it's like. But for us that don't, here's Jairus, his only daughter is dying. And up until this point, he's done everything he could do, like a good parent would. I mean, I'm sure he's hired the best doctors that money could buy. I mean, he's done that. And just like a lot of us, I mean, he has been praying and praying and praying and praying, and his daughter keeps getting worse and worse and worse. And he's at the point where he doesn't know what to do, and he doesn't know where to turn. But he has heard about Jesus. And at this point, I mean, he's heard a lot of things. We know that, if you remember a few weeks ago, Jesus, he heals a centurion, a soldier's servant, in the same town. And so he probably heard all about that. He probably knew this centurion because he was a higher up up in town as well. Maybe he's even seen Jesus heal people the last time he was in Capernaum, because Jesus was kind of there a lot. Remember, this is kind of his home base. And so Jairus has one last desperate attempt to save his little daughter's life, and he doesn't care about respect. He doesn't care about prestige. He does not care about what others think. And so he runs up, and he falls at Jesus' feet, and he begs him to come to his house, and he begs him to heal his daughter. And the crowd, they're all watching this unfold, and they're like, this is incredible. We've never seen a respected man like Jairus act this way. Jairus needs Jesus' help, and he is asking, and he is begging for it. Just yesterday, I was at a shoe store in Sandusky, and this lady comes up to me, and she asked me, she's like, hey, and she's with another guy who's probably around my age or so, and she's like, hey, do you know where the Hey Dudes are? Now, I didn't know what a Hey Dude was. I had to look that up afterwards, all right, which is a shoe, by the way, if you're like me and you have no idea. I'm not as young as I used to be, apparently. It's kind of bothered me a little bit. I'm like, those look like cool shoes. I should know what those are, all right? So anyway, this lady, she comes up and asks me, and I'm like wearing a sweatshirt, and like I got a hole in my jeans, and I obviously don't work there, and she's like, where are the Hey Dudes? And I'm like, I wasn't even exactly sure what she said. I'm like, I don't know. You know, I was just like, I just told her plainly, I'm like, I have no idea where that is. Okay, that's what I said. I have no idea where those are. And she looks at me and she's like, okay. And then she keeps walking, and I hear her tell the guy that she's with, she's like, he knows exactly where the Hey Dudes are, and he's just not telling us. And I'm like, what? You know, unlike me and this lady, I did not have the power to help her out because I had no idea what they even were. Again, then I'm on my phone. I'm like, what are Hey Dudes? If she's telling me Hey Dude, I was like, hey, you know, what's she saying? And so I'm like trying to figure this out. But unlike me, Jesus, he actually has the power to help. Here's this guy who's coming to ask Jesus for help, kind of like this lady, coming to ask me for help. But Jesus, he actually has the power to help her, and he is willing to help her. And so they start heading to Jairus' house. And so while he was going, Luke just says, man, the crowds were nearly crushing him. Like, this is, even in the Greek, it's like it is hard for him to breathe because they're so packed in. Kind of like if you're like in a mosh pit at a concert or something. I mean, it is just, there's people everywhere. And as we read this story, all right, if you're like me, you're like, oh, okay, I get the point of the story. I know how this story goes. Like, I know how this episode is going to play out, you know? Here's Jesus. He's, like, doing his thing. All right, you got this desperate dad who's like, my little girl, she's at the point of death. Like, what are we going to do? And Jesus is like, okay, I'm going to go. I'm going to heal her. I'm going to save the day. And then they start going, but oh, no, there's this crowd. And they're like pushing Jesus aside. He can't get there. Like, are they going to get there in time? What's going to happen? You get, like, the drama of the story? Like, we could see the drama. This is actually what happened. But then what's crazy is we're like, okay, what's going to happen? Is she going to die? Is he going to save her? Like, what is happening here? And then Luke starts rattling off the extended medical history of some random woman in the crowd. Right? It's crazy. It's like Luke completely stops. He's got, like, the drama is all there. Like, this is crazy. What are they going to do? And then Luke's like, oh, yeah. Oh, I forgot to say. There's actually this one lady in the crowd. And she had, like, this like, blood issue thing going on. And she'd been dealing with this for like 12 years, long time, over a decade. And she has seen many doctors, and she's seen a bunch of physicians, and she's had a bunch of procedures done to try to fix the issue. And instead of getting better, it actually got worse. And he's given us all this information. We're like, what does this have to do with the story? You ever got like that friend who is very open about their physical issues? You know what I'm talking about? Like, everything that's going wrong, they're like, dude, check this out. You know, I woke up this morning, I had this. You know, and you're like, whoa, put that away, man. I don't need to see that, okay? And they're like telling you all about, any of you guys got a friend like that? Okay, first service, they all had friends like that. You guys are like, I don't wanna, they're here, you know, maybe that's why you're not talking. But a lot of times doctors are like that, right? Like Luke here. Luke, remember, Luke's a doctor, and he's actually the typical doctor. He's all into, like, this type of thing. Just for me, just a few weeks ago, I was, Kate thought maybe I had strep throat, okay? Because she had had strep throat a few times, and it was, like, really bad. And then my throat felt weird, and I told her that, which was a mistake. And then she's like, oh, no, you need to go get tested. We got to get you tested. What's going to happen? And so I'm like, I don't know where to get tested. I don't know what that is. I don't know what's going on here. And so she's like, I'm going to schedule you an appointment with my family doctor, and we're going to get you tested. And so here I am, a grown man. I go to the doctor, and, you know, when I was a kid, my mom scheduled my appointments, and now my wife is scheduling my appointments for the doctor. Things have not changed. And I go in there, and the doctor's cool. Like, she's fine. She's awesome. She's really into the health stuff, which is, like, obviously, she's a doctor. Like, that's what she studied. That's what she's into. She knows all that stuff. And it's funny, because I'm sitting there, and I'm, like, not into the health stuff at all. You know, I'm just like, she's asking me questions like, do you do this? Do you do that? You know, how often are you active? I'm like, what does that mean? You know, I'm just like, I don't know, man. I'm like regular. Is that like what? I'm regular in everything, right? Normal, is that a thing? You know, she's like asking me about my diet. I'm like, normal. Like, you know, she's like, well, what exactly? I'm like, I don't know. I have fast food, if that's what you're asking. She's like, you know, and I'm like, yeah, it's good. Okay, that's why I do it. And, again, I might not last as long as some of you guys, but I will enjoy my life more because of that. And she's asking me questions like, when was the last time you saw the doctor? And I'm like, I was like, maybe I was 16 years old, like something like that. And she's like, okay, all right. So you haven't seen? I'm like, not really. And she's, you know, does dentist count? I've been there. And she's like, well, when was your last blood work done? I'm like, I'll be honest with you, I don't even know what blood work is. Why are you working on the blood? Like, I don't get what's going on with that. And then she's asking me about vaccines, like, you got your flu or your COVID and your tetanus. And I'm like, I'm just like, no, I haven't gotten, I don't know where I'm at in the series of, like, tetanus and, like, how long that lasts. And she's, like, telling me all about them. And, you know, she's, like, really into this stuff. And I'm not. And I'm just like, you know, she's typing things away. And I'm like, what is she writing in there? Like, just put, you know, yeah, I have no idea. And Luke's like that. Right? Like, Luke is into this stuff. And so that's the reason why he's going into so much detail. But as we read this, if you're like me and we're reading this, we're like, okay, what's going on? We're like, this is so sad. Like, I get it. And I'll acknowledge that. But what about the little dying girl? Like, isn't that the point of the story? Isn't that the issue of what's going on here? And Luke doesn't stop. He keeps going. He's like, oh yeah, and this woman, she came up. It was crazy. Right? She approached Jesus from behind, and she touched the end of his robe, and instantly her bleeding stopped, meaning not like it started getting better. She was like, oh, a little relief. It was like instantly done, over, gone. She felt the pain go away. And the issue, just to get us all on the same page, the issue that this lady is dealing with, and most of us, we're all adults in here, is she's dealing with like an uncontrollable menstrual flow, okay? All right, like constant, meaning it's just not going away. And I am no expert in this area by any means, but even I know this is not ideal, okay? This is not something that anybody wants to deal with. And so here she is, because of this specific issue, she's probably unable to have kids. She's considered ceremonial unclean, meaning she couldn't worship with anybody else. She was not allowed to be touched by anybody else. She was not even really allowed to be there in the crowd. She was not supposed to be there in that crowd. And she had been struggling with this for 12 years, meaning for 12 years, no one has hugged her. No one has held her hand. No one has tapped her on the shoulder. And if she had had money before, which it sounds like she did, it's all gone. She spent it all on doctors. And she went through many medical procedures. Again, no pain medication. All right? They didn't have that back then. She's willing to go through this, all kinds of horrific stuff just to stop it. And she suffered big time. Mark tells us, instead of getting better, got worse. And so now she's incredibly poor. She's hopeless. And Dr. Luke tells us she's virtually incurable. If the doctors couldn't figure it out, I mean, it's just not going to happen. And she thinks in her mind, I don't know why she thinks this, she thinks in her mind, if I could only touch Jesus' shirt, I will be healed. And so she goes, and she pushes through the crowd, something she was not allowed to do, something she was not supposed to do, and she is able to grab on to Jesus' robe, and instantly she is healed. And again, we read this, and we're like, okay, that's great. Like, good for her. But what about the dying little girl? Like, isn't that the main thing going on here? Like, touch and go. Move on. The little girl is dying. He's got to go. Touch and get out of the way. Like, cool side note, Luke. All right, but now back to the little girl. And here's Jesus, right? What do we got here? We got Jesus. He's surrounded by this big crowd. We got the disciples. They're trying to get Jesus through. You got Jairus. He's like, hurry up, Jesus. Come on, come on, come on. This way. But Jesus stops. He starts looking around. He's like, whoa, 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 whoa. All right, who did it? Who did it? Somebody touched me. Somebody touched me. I felt it. I was touched. All right, something happened. All right, and so he asked that. We got it? No? Okay, here we go. All right. He asked the question. He's like, who touched me? Who was it? And as he's looking around, he's trying, like, we're not going anywhere until we figure this out. Somebody touched me. I felt it. I was touched. And everybody around, they're all like denying it. They're all just like, I don't know. I mean, I brushed up against you probably. Like, I was there, but I didn't, like, I don't know what you mean by touch. Like, are you poking you or what, he pinched you? Like, what's going on here? And then Peter, he leans over to Jesus, like, Jesus, I know you're like God of the universe and everything, but he's like, the crowds are hemming you in. He's like, everybody is pressing against you. You got like 10 people touching you, like right now. Like everybody is touching you, all right? And Jesus, he's just like, no, 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 no. You don't understand, Peter. Somebody touched me. And he's like, we are not going anywhere. We're not going anywhere. We're not going. We'll deal with the girl later. We're going to figure this thing out together. We're going to figure this out. And he says, I know the power has gone out for me. He's like, I felt it. Now, when he says this, it's not like, oh man, here's Jesus. He's like drained of power. Like this girl goes, you know, like he's playing, you know, like a video game or something where you're like shooting or getting shot and it's like your power, your life kind of drains. He's like at 50% now, doesn't know if he can handle the dying girl, you know, like that's not the situation that's going on here, all right? What Jesus wants to know is he wants to know what happened, who it was that touched him. Now, my question for you is this. How do you think Jairus felt at this moment? How do you think he felt? I mean, I'm sure he's asking the question, Jesus, what are you doing? My daughter is dying. This doesn't matter. We need to go. You ever feel that way when you're dealing with God? Or when you have a problem in your own life? We're just like, why? Why are we doing this? All right? Why does this matter? This is go time. Like, let's go. You know, we got some problem we've been asking, but it just seems like God has placed your problem on his back burner. We're just asking, how long is this going to take? Like, let's go, Jesus. What's going on? Why is it taking so long? And it almost feels like, if we're honest with ourselves, and a lot of us, we felt this, all right, it almost feels like he just doesn't care. It's the same feeling, by the way, that the disciples felt just, you know, in this time period for us a couple weeks ago, but for them just a couple days ago when they're in that boat during that storm and they run up to Jesus who's sleeping. They're like, Jesus, do you even care? We are going to die. That's the question. Do you even care? And Jesus is like, seriously? You're asking if I care? See, nobody here in this situation wants this. Jairus doesn't want this. He's like, we need to go. She doesn't want this. She just wants to touch and go and be done with it. Peter and the disciples, they don't want this. I mean, think about it. If Jesus was an emergency room doctor, right, what he's doing here is he's choosing to deal with a woman and let that little dying girl go. And really, if he was an emergency room doctor with this situation today, I mean, you get sued for that, for medical malpractice. You cannot do that. See, only Jesus cares about figuring this thing out, and he's acting like a reckless doctor. Do you feel the tension in the story? There's tension here. This is real life. This actually happened, and waiting must have felt like an eternity for Jairus. I don't know about you. I hate waiting, right? Like, patience is just not my thing, okay? I'm just not good at it. I wish I was, but I'm not. Just a couple years ago, me and our staff, we were in San Diego for a conference, and a few of us, including Mike, we decided we're going to hop over the border for, like, lunch. We'll go to Tijuana, grab some lunch, we'll come back. And getting over to Mexico was, like, 2 minutes. You know, you just kind of walk through. They're like, oh, yeah, come on in. Anybody could come in. But getting back in the United States, it was like a three-quarter of a mile line that we had to stand there in the heat. We're just like, oh, you got to be kidding me. You know, we standing there with everybody, and it was just like, it was miserable. You got no phone, you got no internet, it's just kind of us, and you're looking at the same people for like 3 hours. Like, that's what we were doing. It was just miserable. Why? Because it's just like, you're just stuck there waiting. You're not accomplishing anything. It's just, you're stuck waiting. See, some of you guys, you feel like you've been waiting on God for a long time, and you're like me. Patience ain't your thing. See, Jesus makes Jairus wait, and nobody understands. Luke tells us that when the woman saw that she was discovered, meaning Jesus is not letting this thing go, right? He won't quit. He stopped, right? He's not going to see the little girl anymore. He's got to figure this thing out. It says, she came trembling, and she fell down before him, and in the presence of all the people, the entire crowd, she declared the reason she had touched him. She explains her medical condition, what the issue is, and then she explained her reason. This is, I thought maybe I would be healed, and then she explains how she was instantly healed. She's like, and it worked. So I was kind of right, Jesus. I was right. And Jesus gets down on this lady who's been struggling for over a decade, and he gets down on her level, and he says, daughter, your faith has saved you. You can go in peace. Now the question is, faith in what? What does he mean by faith here? See, sometimes I feel like, is it just like faith? I feel like we treat faith like a thing that we can hold on to. You know, like, grab, like, dude, check out my hunk of faith. My hunk of faith is bigger than your faith. You know, like it's like we carry around this big faith, like it's something that we can hold on to. And if you think about it, people all around the world have all kinds of, have faith in all kinds of stuff. Like right now, I mean, we've heard this before. Like, you right now, you have faith in your chair. That's holding you up. All right, it's good. You all do. Otherwise, you wouldn't be sitting there. Like, we got faith that that these giant beams up here, there's four of them, that those, you know, are going to stay up. And the building's going to stay up and not crash down on us. By the way, people in our church, guys in our church put those up. So I'll stand over here, you know? Think about that for the rest of the message. No, don't. But you got faith in the building. We got faith in all kinds of stuff, right? We got faith in religious stuff. I mean, people all around have faith in different types of gods and different beliefs. And maybe you're sitting in here, you're like, I'm not even sure if I believe in a God. All right, if that's you, then you got faith in your opinions that you know what's true. Like, we all have faith in something. And what Jesus is pointing out is he's saying, hey, what he's pointing out to this lady, he's saying, your faith in me. It's not just you having all this faith that you walk up and you've been struggling and you got this big chunk of faith that you're like, dude, check me out. No. He's saying it was your faith in me that has saved you. It's not about having faith. It's about who you have your faith in or about what you have your faith in. And while Jesus is having this little object lesson in the middle of the road while all these crowds, it says he was still speaking. Someone came from the synagogue leader's house, Jairus' house, and they said, hey, Jairus, your daughter's dead. Don't bother the teacher anymore. When Jairus heard these words, I mean, his worst fears become reality. Right? I bet Jairus loses it. You know, he's got a mixture of frustration and mourning and instant loss, and he was so close to saving her. He had tried everything, and this was it, and he thought it was going to work, and he was so, so close. But Jesus overheard it, and he answered him. He says, Jairus, don't be afraid. Right? Only believe. All right? Believe meaning just believe that I can do it. No. It's only believe. He's saying, have faith that I can do this. He's saying, I can do this. I got you. Believe in me. It's the idea of like, I want you to trust me when you have little hope, like you did 5 minutes ago. And I want you to trust me when all hope is gone, like the circumstances going on right now. What Jesus is doing here from Jairus is he is asking for another level of faith. And after he came to the house, they make their way there. He let no one enter with him except for Peter, John, James, and the child's father and mother. And everyone outside the house, they're all crying and mourning for her, right? Which was a very normal thing. Back then, when someone died, what you would do is you would hire a professional mourner or mourners, like a group of people that would come and sit outside your house, and they would yell, and they would wail, and they would cry. They would play music. How would you like that, by the way, for a job? Like, that's you just go cry all day, okay? Like, that's what they did. And so that's what's going on. I mean, they're already there. They're at the house. They're posted up. They know she's dead. And Jesus looks at him. He's like, hey, stop crying because she's not dead. She's just asleep. I got this, guys. All right, don't worry about it. And they start mocking him. They laughed at him because they knew she was dead. They're like, nah, man. All right, we see dead people all the time. This is kind of what we do, Jesus. She's dead. All right, I saw it. She is definitely dead. And so Jesus, he kicks them out and he shuts the doors behind him and he walks over to this little girl and he takes her by the hand and he calls out, child. Now, this word, Mark actually tells us the exact word that he gives. It's a word that is more endearing. It's more like, hey, sweetheart, get up. And her spirit returned, meaning she was definitely dead. She was dead. And she got up at once. And she's trying to figure out, she's like, what just happened? And then he gives orders to her. She's like, yeah, she looks hungry. You guys should give her something to eat. All right? And so her parents, they were astounded. I bet they were. They're just like, they cannot believe. They're overjoyed. But then he instructed them to tell no one what had happened. Well, why does he do this? He actually does this a lot. When he heals somebody, it seems like a lot of times he's just like, hey, don't tell anybody I did this. Can you do me a favor? And they're like, okay. All right, well, why does he do this? Like, isn't this what he should want? Like, think about it. The way we think, it'd be like, well, it seems like if people would find out that Jesus brought this girl back to life, that there would be more people would be more prone to have faith in him. All right? But this is what the issue is. This is not why Jesus came. Like, we got to understand that Jesus is not here to fix all our problems. Like, Jesus does not work for us. He doesn't. He's not here to solve our problems. He's not here just to serve us with whichever way we want him to serve us. That's not why he came. He came to save us, not to serve us. He came to build a movement that would ultimately be for our benefit. I mean, think of who we got here today. We got this woman, all right? She just wants her problem to go away. Just like most of us, all of us probably, with our issues. We just want our issues to go away. But what did she get? Man, she got time with the king. She got, just think about this for a second. She got the God of the universe to look her in her eye and call her his daughter. By the way, that's better than her problem going away. And we got Jairus. He just wants his problem to go away. He wants his daughter's problem to be fixed. And Jesus, basically how he responds to him, he's like, yeah, I'm going to do it. I'm going to take care of it. This isn't why I came, but I'm going to do it. But I'm going to do it in my timing. Like, I don't just want you to see me heal her. I want you to see me bring her back to life. And it's almost like Jesus is saying, hey, all right, what you're asking for, I'm actually going to give that to you, but I'm going to give you something greater than what you're asking for. I want you to understand that I don't just have the power over sickness. I got the power over death itself. It's like Jesus saying, put your faith in me. Another level type faith. And so you might be here today. I mean, we've got people all different places. You might be here today and you might be here. You just got the problem that you're just trying to figure out. And that's cool, right? Like that's okay. We all got issues. Maybe you don't even sure like where you land on God. You're trying to figure out this whole Jesus thing. You're just like, man, I got problems. I don't know what to do with them. I don't know where to go. I don't know where to turn. But I'm trying this out. Like I'm giving God a shot. And that's okay. But here's what you got to understand is that Jesus is more worried about your deeper issues than your surface level problems. He just is. Here's Jesus saying, I want to fix your problems. Sure. Like, this is not how I created the world. This is not what I ever wanted for you. This is not how I intended the world to be. But here's Jesus saying, but I want so much more for you. Like, I don't want you to go through problems, and I hate watching you go through problems. It's not how I wanted it. And I can fix every one, but it's only temporary. It's not going to fix anything. Ultimately, he's going to fix it all, but in our life, when he's saying, I just want something so much more for you, I want to be your dad. I want to call you my son. I want to call you my daughter. Or the way the New Testament describes it, he says, I want to adopt you into my family. I want you in my family. And that's why he came. He came to offer you life. He came to offer you freedom. He came to offer you a chance to be who God created you to be. And there's people in this room that you just, I don't know. You've never taken that step. You've never, if you were serious, but you know, if you were honest with yourself, you look back and you're like, man, I can't remember a time in my life where I ever like, I don't know, made the decision to give my life over to him. And you should do that. Because God doesn't guarantee you tomorrow. He doesn't owe you tomorrow. See, Jesus made it super simple. He wasn't coming to throw on a bunch of rules of like, hey, do this, do this, do this. You can't do that. You can't do that. That's not what he's about. All right. He's saying, I'm trying to set you free. All right. We're all broken people. We're all messed up. We're all messed up, jacked up, horrible, terrible people is what we say here. That's who we are. And he came voluntarily for some reason because he loves us so much. I don't even understand it. Like, I don't get it. All right. I know he loves us. I just don't understand why. But he does. And he loves us so much. And he loved you so much that he came 2,000 years ago. He lived a perfect life. He tried to point people towards him, and ultimately he died for you. Why did he have to die? Well, that's because you are a sinner, you are messed up, and you are broken just like me. And your sin has to be paid for. Well, why can't he just sweep it under the rug? Why can't he just forgive and forget? Why can't he do that? Well, because he's perfectly just. All right, a perfectly just judge or a perfectly just being cannot just overlook sin. It has to be paid for. That's what being just is. And he's just. And so he paid for it himself, voluntarily. We didn't earn it. He didn't owe it to us. And he did it. And he did it for you. And now he offers everybody a chance, an opportunity to hand our lives over to him. And it's a decision. It's not a decision between you and your spouse or you and mom and you and grandma or you and me, okay? It's a decision between you and your creator. And I would encourage you to do that today because, again, he doesn't owe you tomorrow. For those of us, we've done that. Which is hopefully the majority of us in here. How are you doing on waiting? How are you doing on patience with God? How are you doing on having that next level type faith that he doesn't ask? He really requires from us. This is something we all need to work on. It's something that's difficult. It ain't easy. I wish it was. But when we got problems in our life, what we got to remember is that God's number one concern is not our little problem. It's about our spiritual issue. It's about our family issue. It's about him calling us son and daughter. It's about our relationship. That's the most important thing. And that's why he came. And that's what he cares about the most. Let's pray. God, we thank you. For everything that you've given us, we thank you for these words that you gave us. You let us know what happened. You give us an example of how we should have faith. And faith is not something that's easy, all right? For some of us, it's like, oh, yeah, I got faith. We got all kinds of faith. But it's not something that, not real faith. It's difficult. Just like it was for Jairus. Just like it was for this lady. But God, we thank you for that. Lord, we thank you for loving us. Don't understand why you love us so much, but I believe that you do, and I thank you for that, and thank you for dying for us so that we can have the opportunity to have a real, true relationship with our Creator and our dad. God, we thank you for that. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.